All right, we're following a developing story surrounding one of the NHL's top players. Rangers star Artemi Panarin has taken a leave of absence from the team after a newspaper in his native Russia published a story alleging Panarin physically assaulted an 18-year-old woman back in 2011. The accusation came from one of Panarin's former coaches in Russia, but the Rangers, in confirming Panarin's leave, suggested the story is politically motivated. Panarin is one of the few top Russian athletes to be openly against President Vladimir Putin of Russia.
It's a story that's shaken up the hockey world with shockwaves, felt from Manhattan to Moscow. Here in America, Artemi Panarin is a star winger, an MVP candidate, the best player on the New York Rangers. But back home in Russia, the 29-year-old is something far more dangerous. The most vocal athlete opponent of Vladimir Putin. Today, Emily Kaplan explains the explosive accusations that have sidelined Panarin from the National Hockey League. And then the Washington Post's Moscow correspondent, Isabel Kershudian, gives us the view from inside Russia and tells us what might really be going on. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, February 25th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Emily, it's great to have you on the show today.
It's great. I get to beat you on Around the Horn on Monday and come on your podcast later in the week.
Yeah, I'm still stinging from your decisive victory over me this week. But I bring you on, Emily, because there's this story that I really need to talk to you about. Because a Russian player just took a leave of absence from the New York Rangers. It's this huge story that's sort of taking over the NHL right now. And I've been reading your reporting about this, and it's pretty clear there are a number of fishy details with a lot of layers to unpack here. Can you just introduce us to this player in question? Tell us about Artemi Panarin.
So he grew up in this medium-sized town, Korkina, which is about a 24-hour drive east of Moscow. And he was passed over in the NHL draft. He was a little small, and there's always this fear that Russian players are not going to come over to North America. But then he had a breakout season in the KHL, which is the pro league in Russia, in 2014-15. And he signed with the Blackhawks as a free agent. And he shined on a line with Patrick Kane.
Panarin, what a passing play! Key to Kane to Panarin, and it was a 6x4! A tough angle, but Panarin puts his team back in front.
Won Rookie of the Year.
I'd like to thank my family, my friends, my teammates, and fans for support.
Chicago traded him to Columbus because they were strapped against the salary cap and they didn't know if they could pay him. Panarin shined in Columbus too, but it was always clear that he craved a bigger stage. And then he became a free agent in 2019, which brings us to the Rangers. And Pablo, I know you're a Knicks fan.
Yes.
The Rangers aren't quite as dysfunctional, but they do have this habit of going after the biggest free agent in the market every year and often overpaying them and then realizing they were past their prime. Yeah, does that sound familiar?
That sounds familiar. Yeah. That's why I'm no longer a Knicks fan, incidentally. Yeah.
Fair. Well, maybe you could be a Rangers fan because Panarin was 27 and he got a 7-year deal with the Rangers for $81.5 million. And this crazy thing happened. It wasn't a bad deal at all. The Rangers have committed to a rebuild over the last few seasons, but Panarin's presence totally expedited that process. He was a runner-up for the MVP race last year.
Here's Panarin in front. They score! Butchnevich from Panarin! And the game is tied!
Frankly put, he might be the Rangers' best free agent signing ever.
Here's Panarin looking. Pass it!
So he's this huge deal for the Rangers. He's a promising up-and-coming star in the NHL. But on Monday, Emily, a Russian newspaper publishes a story about him. What did that story say?
So one of Panarin's former KHL coaches, Andrei Nazarov, claimed that while the team was on a road trip in Latvia in 2011, Panarin got into a physical altercation with an 18-year-old woman. Nazarov's interview said that Panarin, quote, sent her to the floor with several powerful blows. He also said that a criminal case was opened, but local police were paid 40,000 euros to cover it up.
So, Emily, has the woman in question been found? Has she been talked to? Are there any official records of this incident beyond Nazarov's account?
So, Pablo, as we record this on Wednesday, a victim has not come forward. We haven't been able to recover any police or court records. The hotel told a Latvian newspaper that an incident never happened there. And some people are starting to poke holes in Nazarov's story. For example, he specifically mentions 40,000 euros, but that wasn't even the currency in Latvia until 2014.
So, Emily, given all of that, as we stand here today on Wednesday, what's your best understanding of these allegations?
So I talked to two of Panarin's teammates that were on the 2011 team, and neither had any recollection of the incident. Kip Brennan said he didn't hear or know anything like that happening. John Morasty, who I should note, told me that Nazarov was, quote, a good guy and he enjoyed playing for him, told me, I barely think anything like that would have happened, and I'm sure I would have heard about it. And I don't understand why it would be brought up 10 years later. Sounds like a hoax to me. However, there was one teammate, Mikhail Anisin, who did an interview with the Sport Express, which is a popular Russian website, on Wednesday. And he said there was some sort of incident that happened, and it was at a karaoke bar. But Panarin did not punch anyone. Anisin said the police came to the hotel and determined nothing serious happened. So it's really hard to get firm information from all of this.
So when and how has Panarin himself responded to these allegations?
Well, we haven't heard from Panarin himself, but his agent told the New York Post that he categorically denies all of these false allegations. And the Rangers also swiftly came to Panarin's defense. They put out a statement on Monday which read, "This is clearly an intimidation tactic being used against him for being outspoken on recent political events. Artemi is obviously shaken and concerned and will take some time away from the team. The Rangers fully support Artemi and will work with him to identify the source of these unfounded allegations."
So that part of the statement, Emily, that you read about being outspoken on recent political events, that's why I've been so consumed by this story. Can you elaborate on that for us? What is that in reference to with Panarin?
So what we believe that to be in reference to was last month, Panarin posted on Instagram a photo of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny and his family, and he was pledging support for him. And Navalny is one of Putin's most vocal critics. He often calls out corruption in Russia on his YouTube channel, which has 6 million subscribers. And Navalny was poisoned in August, returned to Russia 5 months later, and has since been jailed, which has sparked a significant wave of anti-Putin protests in Russia.
So we're going to dive into the character of Navalny and those protests in a little bit. But at the time of that post in specific, Emily, do you think Panarin understood what he might have been getting into here? Did he know that there would be repercussions of some form for being so outspoken?
And Pablo, there's something you need to know about Panarin. He's very intelligent. He has conviction, but he's also very deliberate. He knows exactly what he's doing. And he's been outspoken about Putin and corruption in Russia before. And while he's always understood the risks involved, nothing really came out of it. So I don't think he expected retribution to this Instagram post. Like, for example, in 2019, he sat down with a Russian journalist and had some pretty candid comments. He was talking about the lawlessness in Russia that is rampant. Panarin also talks about Putin having too much power. The president is, quote, no longer understanding what's right or wrong. He also says that unlike in America, there is still a belief in our society that you can't say bad things about government or you will be killed or poisoned.
So what's your sense, Emily, of why he felt the need to take this leave of absence from the Rangers? Because that's its own enormous story, given how good he is and how important he is to the Rangers here in America. What's he going to be doing also while he's away from the NHL?
Yeah, this is where there's a little bit of a disconnect for a lot of fans because we haven't heard anything from Panarin himself and details are scarce. If you listen to the Rangers, they say he was really shaken up and startled by these accusations and that's why he just needed some time away. I do know he plans to stay here in the U.S. He has a house in Connecticut. That's where he lives. And he doesn't have any plans to return to Russia right now. I've gotten pushback. Some people said this was going to be a 2-week absence. And there really doesn't seem to be a timetable here. Mm. When I talked to someone from the Rangers organization on Wednesday morning, they said we're in this holding pattern. And without new developments, it could be, quote, a while.
So, Emily, I want to understand how rare it is for a Russian athlete to make statements like this opposing Vladimir Putin. How alone is Panarin in terms of this kind of outspokenness?
Now, I can only speak for hockey, and specifically over the last few years, it's extremely, extremely rare. Like, we typically see the opposite. Ahead of the 2018 presidential election, Alex Ovechkin launched a media campaign called Putin Team, which was engineered to drum up support for the Russian president. And Penguin star Evgeny Malkin was also part of the Putin Team. Panarin has been the most vocal by far. And anytime he's posted, like that post on Navalny, reporters like me are always looking at which other Russian players in the league are liking it. And often they don't like it a couple days later. So you understand the stakes here.
So it sounds like players who are from Russia, they may support Panarin, but they're not willing to be permanently seen as doing so.
You know, I talked to another Russian NHL player who is supportive of Navalny, but he asked me that I don't use his name. And when you hear what he told me, maybe you'll understand why. He said, and this is a quote, "Artemi is a very brave man. When we come over here, we're expected to be good soldiers, but the situation back home is very complex. Honestly, I don't think a lot of North Americans understand it. But it is true. If you speak your mind, you are fearful there could be retribution or consequences for your career or your family."
So turning to the man who made these allegations, the coach Andrei Nazarov, who is he, Emily? What's his motivation in all of this?
So he's a longtime coach. He actually played nearly 600 games in the NHL, and he does have a reputation for being pretty politically motivated and being a little out there. People I've talked to believe that he could be using this to gain political curry, perhaps for the Russian Ice Hockey Federation, maybe even trying to smear Panarin so he's kept off the Olympic team next year. And in the past, he's been very, very critical of players who have spoken out against Putin or Russia.
So, Emily, it sounds like the theory is that there is some personal benefit, some personal upside to Nazarov saying something like this in his hockey career.
Yeah, he's out of work right now. And the belief is he feels like these comments might make himself look good to the Russian Ice Hockey Federation. And it's important to note that the Russian Ice Hockey Federation is closely linked with the Russian government.
Mm. So here in America, what steps are the NHL taking to look into this incident?
So Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly told me that the NHL is looking into the allegations. And that's short of saying they've launched an investigation. It's more like they're just monitoring the situation. It's important to note that the NHL is the only of the four major North American professional leagues that doesn't have a specific domestic violence policy. Cases are handled on a case-by-case basis, and the results are always judged by Gary Bettman. And this is one I wouldn't imagine the NHL would act on unless there is any evidence or victim comes forward.
So the Rangers, which are currently about middle of the pack in the East right now in the NHL, they're left without their best player, Emily. They're left without the greatest free agency acquisition of all time, as you characterized it. What kind of an impact does Panarin's absence have on them as a hockey team?
It's huge. I mean, he basically carried that team last year when he was an MVP finalist. This is a team that is rebuilding. There's probably not expectations yet from the front office that they're competing for the playoffs or going far right now. But they arrived ahead of schedule, and Panarin being out definitely puts them behind schedule. But as for what happens with Artemi Panarin and how this entire situation plays out, honestly, Pablo, I have no problem saying I don't know.
Emily Kaplan, thank you for making sense of one of the more fascinating and confusing stories in the world of hockey.
Thanks, Pablo.
After we taped with Emily on Wednesday, she received a statement from the Russian Pro Hockey League, the KHL, about the allegations surrounding Panarin. The statement says that the league has, quote, not been aware of or received a complaint in relation to any incident involving Artemi Panarin in December 2011. And that if the KHL did receive any complaint, it would have investigated, quote, as we take any allegations of misconduct incredibly seriously, end quote. coming up. More on the dynamic between Artemi Panarin and Vladimir Putin from inside Russia.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Artemi Panarin isn't just one of the brightest young stars in the NHL. He's also one of the biggest names in all of Russian sports. So to get a better idea of how this news surrounding him is being received back in his homeland, I reached out to one reporter who has a particularly advantageous vantage point. Isabel Kershudian, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell us first how you came to be based in Moscow, because you're in Russia right now. We're speaking to you from across the world. And tell us what you work on there.
Yeah, so I'm a foreign correspondent for The Washington Post. My career started in sports. I was actually covering the Washington Capitals for the Post until, I guess, a year ago now. It's crazy. It's been an interesting year here. but yeah, my family, you know, is from the Soviet Union, though I was born in the United States. So I grew up speaking Russian and had always dreamed of being a foreign correspondent. And though it's not a usual move to go from, you know, covering hockey to covering Russia and Putin, I was able to kind of convince the Washington Post to let me give it a shot.
And now we have this story that is kind of at the center of the Venn diagram that is your life. So, Isabel, I was hoping you could help us first just better understand what exactly is happening broadly in Russia with these protests that are happening right now. How would you describe, for those who are unfamiliar, what's going on?
It's a risky thing here to be an opposition leader, an opposition figure to Vladimir Putin. And we saw that in August when Alexei Navalny, who's kind of the most prominent Kremlin critic of the past 10 years, I would say, was in Siberia on a trip, falls ill on a flight back to Moscow. And immediately there's a suspicion that he was poisoned.
Alexei Navalny, a rival to Russian President Vladimir Putin, is recovering in Berlin after the suspected assassination attempt. He was poisoned by a nerve agent called Novichok.
He's flown out to Berlin to recover, nearly dies, but fortunately makes a full recovery. And then, you know, I think a lot of people were wondering if he would ever come back, what would kind of happen further.
Everyone asking me this question, are you afraid? Are you going to come back to Russia? And my job is to not be afraid and go back to Russia.
In January, he announces that he is indeed going to return to Russia, despite kind of all of the risks associated with that.
I understand how system work in Russia. I understand that that Putin hates me. And I understand that these people who are sitting in the Kremlin, they are ready to kill.
And is immediately jailed upon his return.
A final kiss, a final hug with his wife, Yulia, and then opposition leader Alexei Navalny is led away by Russian security forces.
So this is what sets off kind of protests and, you know, this sort of wave of support for him.
Tonight, stunning scenes across Russia. Tens of thousands taking to the streets in a massive show of support for Russia's jailed opposition leader, Alexei Navalny.
It is protests across this whole country in more than 90 cities.
And my understanding also, Isabel, is that Navalny is using the internet in a way that is conspicuous, and he's also organizing people and encouraging them to go out into the streets himself. And so this is something that is not so common in Russia, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, in the United States, you've got all sorts of kind of sources for news on television. Here, everything on TV is state controlled. You are going to get one version of the story if you watch the TV news here. So what Navalny and his team is really successful at is kind of using the internet and the freedom of the internet. And it is still pretty free here in Russia. He has his own YouTube channel. He and his team are really kind of clever on Twitter, on Instagram. They, you know, kind of make use of funny memes. So they really appeal to youth. And you look at someone like Artemi Panarin, he's a young guy, really popular hockey star, and someone presumably a lot of young Russians would follow on Instagram. Anything on social media, I think, resonates a little bit because it is appealing to the audience that kind of is with Navalny's message.
So that's fascinating. And that's the larger context for, as you say, Artemi Panarin sharing his support for the foremost opposition leader in Russia. And I'm curious, when someone like Panarin sounds off to that extent, does that break through in Russia? What kind of impact does that have?
Yeah, I will say it really stands out because there's a surprise element, right? I was trying to look up other Russian athletes who had ever said anything bad about Putin. And honestly, like, the list is so short. Certainly it's unique for a player that I would say is in the prime of his career. You know, I'd argue he's the best Russian hockey player in the world right now. So even just, you know, an Instagram post, it is a big deal. It does come through. People do take notice. But I think that combined with some of the things he said 2 years ago, which were a lot sharper and a lot more critical, kind of give a, you know, a fuller picture of a guy who's like finding his political voice and not afraid. And that's the biggest thing. That's Navalny's message, is you shouldn't be afraid. Go out to the streets. They can't arrest everyone. So for someone so high profile to show he's not afraid, that's what I think comes through.
So the other big question around these allegations is whether the Russian government itself had anything to do with it. What's your understanding of that dynamic?
Yeah, so it's always interesting when you're explaining kind of the way Russia works to other people, because on the one hand, we're talking about a place that the entire world believes poisoned their main opposition figure in what was a state-ordered attack by Putin himself. But on the other hand, it's like, well, they probably didn't do this. And so it's hard to kind of reconcile those two things. But, you know, I just kind of thought this whole story was probably a little too sloppy to be the Kremlin's handiwork. You know, I think if the Kremlin was really behind this, it would have been a lot more organized or coordinated. We would have seen the story get more traction on state TV. I mean, if they really wanted to smear Artemi Panarin, I mean, I think they would have, you know, found a woman to come forward, and that would have been more convincing than Andrei Nazarov, who nobody in Russia even sees as being that credible.
So you had alluded to this, but I want to clarify it then. How much attention have these allegations been getting in Russia?
Yeah, very little. To kind of give you some perspective, I mean, I think I follow the news here pretty intensely. And hockey is especially something that interests me. And I didn't even see it until the news started breaking that Panarin was going to take a leave of absence. I didn't see the original story because it really, like, it was picked up, sure, but I don't think anyone really took it seriously, and it didn't get that much traction. So for me, the story really only got traction when it became an issue in the U.S. and kind of Panarin's response to it.
So, Isabel, you described the scarcity of athletes in Russia who've been willing to speak out against Vladimir Putin. But there have been some who've expressed support for him. And I'm thinking most notably here of Panarin's hockey counterpart, Alexander Ovechkin, who you covered with the Washington Capitals. How does Ovechkin fit into all of this? How would you characterize the support that Putin gets from Russian athletes in general?
Yeah, I mean, I covered, you know, Ovechkin, who before the 2018 presidential election, you know, started this thing called the Putin Team, which was really just kind of this group on Instagram. I think they had a website, too. But it was just kind of talking about how Putin is great, you know, and then he tried to claim it wasn't political, which if it's called the Putin Team, I don't know how that's not political. Khabib in UFC, who's obviously, you know, a really big deal. I know he's kind of been vocal in his support for Putin. I would say the majority probably don't say anything, right? And that's like the safest lane to be in is to just not get involved in politics at all. I'm sure there are more athletes who dislike Putin or have strong opinions against, and just, you know, take the safe route and don't say anything at all. I think where Ovechkin brings scrutiny on himself as an athlete who plays in Washington, D.C., of all places, is how vocal he is in his support for. I mean, he wears like T-shirts with Putin's face on them. Mm. You know, Ovechkin can't really claim to not be political when he's, you know, actively kind of supporting the president. You have to know you're making a big statement by saying that rather than just saying nothing at all.
Going forward, Isabel, how do you see this incident playing out for Artemi Panarin?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, I sort of wonder what exactly prompted him to take the leave of absence. To me, the story, like I said, it didn't really reek of being something that the Kremlin did. I don't know what exactly spooked him. And I get that he's kind of alone in his activism and kind of being politically vocal, which that in itself is scary. But, you know, I wonder if he's like worried for his family's safety. I don't know that the Kremlin or anyone here would go that far. But again, everything is sort of possible, even though everything doesn't always happen. I think where this goes for Panarin, it depends on what we don't know, what he's dealing with maybe behind the scenes, as far as what he perceives as the consequences for him speaking out.
Isabel, thank you so much for making time for us, all the way from Moscow.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you guys having me on.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.